What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
Hey guys, and welcome to this week's edition of the Defocus Media Podcast. This is Jen.
And I'm Daryl, and this week we're going to change things up a little bit. We're going to talk about what's the latest trending topics in optometry.
And kind of break down some of the worst things and the best things, for that matter, in optometry on the internet right now. I want to lead off with an article that got a lot of blood boiling out there. Recently posted, it's in a publication online called Engadget. The title of the article really kind of sets the test. It says, "This phone-powered vision test can replace your eye doctor."
Whoa. Now hold on. Are you being serious? Someone wrote an article actually stating that a machine can replace an eye doctor. You can't be serious.
I know. It's a real responsible title, which is, I think, what got everyone so upset and riled up. But of course, they're advertising for everybody's latest kind of hate on refractive testing, the SV1 Enterprise by Smart Vision Labs. He kind of goes through the article and says how great it was and how accurate it was. And I love the end all be all was that he knew it, that the technology was great because it came up with the exact same prescription that his eye doctor had given him.
Wow, what does optometry come to? I don't know if it's us as optometrists that are not educating the patients on the importance of refraction, or is it a cost factor? I don't know which one it is. I mean, do you think it's a cost factor? You know, I get it in third world countries. I understand that completely. But, you know, you cannot separate the doctor and the patient. You know, that's the one thing I do like about iNetra. You know, they don't say that their instrument is going to replace the optometrist. You know, it's a component of the examination.
Well, that's the thing. It's not even cheap. So the refraction, they're charging $40 for. And so, the idea behind this is a piece of equipment that an optical shop would buy. I mean, be too expensive for a layperson to buy just at home. And then, of course, it remotely, that all the information gets transferred to an ophthalmologist offsite who will approve the prescription based on the results therein. So kind of similar to how we're seeing other tech being presented right now.
I feel that in regards to getting the most accurate prescription, the optometrist or ophthalmologist and the patient should all be in the same room. We don't need any of that remote business. I feel that's going to set up the patient for failure and also lead to some type of lawsuit of some sort. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. One, I'm of the personal opinion there is no excuse to separate a refraction from a health exam. I understand in third world countries or in remote care situations, that's the most practical way to do it. In America, that's just not a problem with access that would require us to give up healthcare to just give refractions. It's honestly pure laziness, in my opinion. Well, or greed. I guess that would be a better one than just laziness. So I went a little bit undercover. I sent an email to Smart Vision Labs, just trying to really get a feel for what's going on in their refractive technology. And because the claim is that, if there's an eye disease, you'll be directed to see a doctor instead. We won't give you a prescription. So I was just curious, like, how are they going to find eye disease with this vision test app? It was kind of telling from the response that I got. She said, "Before the test begins, the patient is first taken through a brief series of questions about past eye conditions and their medical history. They get asked about diabetes, hypertension, dizziness, etc. If a patient says they have diabetes, the exam will prevent them from moving forward, and the technician administering the test will advise the patient to see a physician." So basically, the only way that the test tells them that they can't move forward is if the patient tells them they have an eye disease. That is just not responsible care. How is a patient going to know whether they have an eye disease or not?
Well, Jennifer, not only that, I mean, how many times have you had a patient come in and they say that they're not diabetic or hypertensive, yet you look at the eye and you clearly see that they are, or you look at their medication list and you clearly see that they are taking hypertensive or diabetic medications. You know, unfortunately, a lot of patients don't know what systemic conditions that they actually have.
And plus, if you're sitting down and you've already planned I'm going to get this refraction right now. I'm going to skip the doctor and just get my prescription. And then you get asked a series of questions where you kind of know if you answer it a certain way, you're probably not going to be able to get your prescription today. It's almost an intelligence test. It's equipped to be, you know, if you do have diabetes, you're probably going to say no just so you can keep going through the test. And it's just set up for failure. The other interesting thing, so the author of this Engadget article, what really spoke to me was he said, oh, it must be accurate because they got the same thing my doctor got. So I asked in the email to Smart Visions Labs, I said, do you get my current glasses prescription and check my vision in it? And of course, the answer was yes. So it's not all that surprising that they got the exact same prescription, is it? Because you fed that information in at the beginning of the test. So surprise, I think most people will actually find that they do get their exact same prescription spit back out again, because otherwise, if the doctor on the other side changes things a whole lot, it's going to increase the remake chance and the chance that the patient will think, well, this prescription isn't correct. They're going to be getting their same prescription really frequently, I think.
Well, one thing I can say for sure, the author of this article will definitely not get any awards for the writer of the year. And this company is definitely set up for failure by trying to take the optometrist out the equation. But on another note, if you think this is crazy, have you seen this new app out known as Simply Contacts?
Yeah, so I was seeing this pop up recently. Dr. Bazan had a really great article in Optometric Management about this. It was my first time I'd heard about it. And then looking into it a little bit more, my gosh, I mean, if we thought these refractive techs were bad at getting glasses prescription, the very concept of getting a contact lens prescription online without anybody evaluating the contact lens on your eye, it's just 100% baffling to me. And I can't imagine anyone writing a prescription for that or signing off on a prescription for that. And I mean, for some reason, legally, they're able to do it right now, which is mind blowing.
Yeah, Jennifer, overall, this whole concept is just bewildering. It makes no sense. It's a lose-lose situation for everyone. Number one, the patient doesn't get the best care. You know, they're not getting the most accurate prescription. They're not getting the front surface of the eye examined to make sure that they can even be fitted with contact lens. Number two, the optometrists are not getting the patients in the chair. Let's be upfront. Let's be frank. You know, when it comes to eye exams with optometrists, the gateway into the optometrist's office is the refraction or the contact lens fitting. And from there, we're able to examine the eyes for visual defects and any other type of ocular conditions. And then at that point, number three, the ophthalmologist comes into play. If we do see something that we can't treat or monitor and watch, we refer them to the ophthalmologist. So if we're not seeing the patients, we're not going to be able to refer to the ophthalmologist. And the guys that really are going to get impacted will be the interior segment ophthalmologists. I mean, this is something that they really have to look at, and we have to work together to push this technology out.
Oh, I agree. So with this Simply Contacts app, I pulled it up and I wanted to look into it a little bit. It says, extend your contact lens prescription in just 5 minutes without the hassle of an office visit. And then here's what you do. You enter your prescription off the box, so your current prescription that a doctor gave you, and then they ask you to record a quick video of your eye so that the doctor can see if your eye is red. That's the health check, I guess, which that's pretty pathetic.
Jennifer, when I read that, I got so upset. This makes no sense. I mean, let's think about it. What about dry eyes? What about corneal irregularities? I mean, this is the type of stuff you can't see with pictures. There's something known as a slit lamp. It's a very nice instrument that we use to look at the different layers of the cornea. There's no way in hell that you can actually perform a contact lens fitting without the use of a slit lamp. You know, this whole Simply Contacts application seems like a get-rich scheme, and it's not ethical.
Well, what I really loved about Dr. Bazan's article was he, knowing that these are ophthalmologists signing off on these contact lens prescriptions, he kind of pointed out the American Academy of Ophthalmology requires 10 exam elements to be formed before you write a prescription. They actually have that in their manual for doctors. So, and at most, the app is going to check maybe 2 out of those 10. So technically, if you write a prescription as an ophthalmologist off that app, you're in, you know, you're going against the guidelines of your own profession and at risk of losing your license technically. But it's just not being enforced for some strange reason. I mean, what do you think it's going to take? Do you think someone will actually have to get seriously injured or blinded before the American Medical Association pays attention to this?
Yeah, Jennifer, there's no doubt about it. There will be some type of vision loss. There will be an accident. And potentially there will be death as well, simply because it is irresponsible not to look at a contact lens on a patient's eye, not to make sure that the most accurate prescription is available. We have to do a better job. I mean, we took an oath as optometrists and ophthalmologists before we even started practicing medicine. We have to do better. Or in this case, ophthalmologists have to do better.
A shock. And what's interesting, and maybe I'm just not in the right circles, but I feel like in optometry, a lot of people are talking about the questionable ethics on these apps, but I haven't seen really similar conversations in ophthalmology circles. I mean, why do you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say greed, you know, but, you know, this is really a tricky conversation here because, you know, practicing in North Carolina, I feel like optometrists and ophthalmologists have a great relationship. You know, I don't know how it is throughout the other part of the country, but, you know, I don't see the ophthalmologists that we co-manage with actually endorsing this type of behavior. So, you know, it's tough. I don't know how to look at this situation. I'm baffled. I mean, it's hard to answer that question without, you know, thinking of my personal experience with ophthalmologists.
Right. Well, just interesting. And another kind of switching gears here on this app, a lot of these apps are saying, oh, we need to exist because patients can't get in to see the eye doctor and we need to give better access to care. Like it's an access issue, like they're doing some sort of public service. Daryl, you kind of sent me this link a couple of days ago. Recently, the VA hospital changed its policy to try to help increase access to care for optometry. And they're now allowing both optometry and audiology appointments to be scheduled by veterans without having to go through a primary care gatekeeper first. So up until this point, if you wanted to see the optometrist in the VA system, you had to go see your primary care physician and then get approval to go see the optometrist. So policies like that absolutely have really hurt with access to care, but they were set up by insurances, not by the fact that optometrists weren't there to see you.
Jennifer, all I can say about that is hallelujah. I mean, do you recall being in the VA and just seeing those patients coming in and just how long it had been since they had their last routine eye exam or their last follow-up because they had to jump through all these hurdles just to get in to see us? I mean, it was sad, you know?
And so I was reading this report. It says, as of April 2016, the average wait time for a veteran to be seen for a medical visit is 3 to 8 weeks. But I do remember for them to see an eye doctor, I mean, they were on waiting lists for months to get an eye exam. And we had plenty of time and availability to see them. It was just they have to go through all these gates to get there.
Yeah, and the other part is, you know, the VA, they have some exceptional clinicians there. So, I mean, they have all the pieces of the puzzle that they need. They just need to allow the veterans to get in
totally
a little earlier.
And
so I'm glad to see this change.
It's tough. And I do understand this gatekeeper philosophy in insurance. So the idea behind it is if a patient's given free rein to just schedule any old appointment that they want to, that they'll be too much of a burden on the system. They'll use too many resources. So you make them go through one person who determines their need, whether they need to see somebody else. At the same time, it is sometimes ridiculously enforced. Back when we were working in the same private practice, we took Medicaid at my office. Did you ever have any trouble with a kid is in your exam chair, they have red eye and they want to be seen by eye doctor, and we can't get authorization from their pediatrician to treat them that day because the pediatrician hasn't seen them in a year and they're going to have to come to their pediatrician's office first.
That's ridiculous. We're talking kids here. You know, and I didn't take Medicaid at my office, but we were talking about kids. I mean, you have to put them at the forefront. Forget all the rules. I mean, you got to, not even just kids, just patients in general. You always have to put them first, you know, regardless of all this payment BS that's out there. I just don't understand this. I mean, what's going on, Jennifer?
I mean, at a certain point, we have to really think about what's practical, because what's practical to that child and that parent is not to leave my office without being seen, without getting taken care of, find a time to schedule with the pediatrician in the next couple of days, miss work, miss school again, and then get to the pediatrician's office and be like, oh, you should see an eye doctor. I mean, the system is failing a lot of people when you set up a system like that.
Okay, Jennifer, so you know the life of an optometrist. We see the craziest and most weirdest things every single day. I want to start a new segment, or let's start a new segment in regards to weird eye news. So the first weirdest thing that I've seen in regards to eye news was at the Olympics. Please tell me that you saw that green water that the Olympic swimmers had to swim in and dive in. Did you see that at all?
At the time, I was like, oh, they're using some sort of special cleaner. And everybody's eyes were really red, of course. But then I guess it came out recently that it actually was green because there was a bunch of algae in the pool, which is like the opposite of clean. Somehow mistakenly, they had dumped hydrogen peroxide into the pool, which denatured the chlorine. And so lots of little critters were able to grow in there. A ton of clear care bottles or something got in there, I guess. I think this like weird eye news story has kind of a sad twist because everything that got reported about this is like, oh, these swimmers, their eyes are all red and fiery. Their eye doctors are having to treat them. So, and then they take a picture of the treatment, this magic treatment on the side of the pool. They're dumping a bottle of Visine in the swimmer's eyes. And I just like literally smacked my forehead. Great advertising for eye care right there. Oh, our go-to for algae water is a bottle of Visine, apparently.
Oh my gosh, that's just horrible. You know, Visine in my office is a bad word. Whenever patients come in and they're new, I tell them that they cannot use that word in my office. They cannot use that product in my office, and we leave it at that. But you know, primarily when I hear the word Visine, it's typically with my patients that come in that are known to smoke a little reefer, a little green, marijuana, you know, that type of stuff for the most part. But I don't have any stories as crazy as that. Do you have any crazy stories with Visine at all, Jennifer?
Well, so this has happened to me more than once, but we'll get this like panicked phone call. Oh my gosh, my pupil is huge on one side. I think I've looked it up and it's a brain tumor. And I was like, oh, so anyone has like a blown pupil, of course, you know, I'm like, well, come on in. They're freaking out, you know, in hysterics. We take some picture. There's no swelling going on. I might even run. The first time this happened to me, like I was legit scared. I was just not thinking straight about what the most likely culprit was here. So I was like, oh my gosh, they must have a brain tumor. First year out of school, Jen, kind of jumping on the crazy train. And I was like, we're in a visual field. It's normal. I'm looking inside the eye. It's, you know, everything looks normal. They can see, you know, like I was like, oh my gosh, it just doesn't look like a tumor, but their pupils definitely dilated. And then I start talking to them a little bit. And kind of jumped in my head. I was like, well, maybe they somehow like self-dilated. Like, because you hear these stories about these crazy people stealing dilation drops out of the office. So I was like, have you put any eye drops in? Like, did it have a red cap on it? She's like, no, I haven't put any drops like that in. And the only drops I've been using are just my rewetting drops. And I was like, oh. So then I'm like, oh, maybe she thinks they're rewetting drops. I was like, well, what do they look like? What are your rewetting drops? And of course, you know, she grabs some Visine. Here's the thing, she'd been putting Visine in like every hour around the clock this morning because her eye was red. And then, you know, of course, the side effect of the Visine is a dilated pupil. So everybody had a good laugh about that once we figured out she wasn't actually dying. But now if anyone calls me about a dilated pupil, I'm always like, are you using Visine? The answer has been yes every single time so far.
You know, the crazy thing about Visine, every time I go to Walmart or like CVS, I always go to the artificial tears section. And if you go to that section, you will see that Visine has a complete monopoly on that entire shelf. They place it right at eye level. There's like a million different options to choose from. So I understand why patients go straight towards Visine, because it's right there for you to buy.
Okay, Have you ever noticed that? I wonder if they partner with CVS or Walgreens or something like that. They must have some sort of choice deal. Like most prime, middle, center aisle brands are put there because they get some sort of really good, I don't know, what's the word? Collaboration, or they get a good deal with the pharmacy involved to do so. So they're giving them a discount with the price of goods, and in exchange they get the front and center property. So Visine is a pharmacy's best friend, I think.
Definitely.
And I have some patients that they use it sparingly and they have redness and it gives them a quick fix. I'm fine with that. It's just, if you come in and tell me your eyes are dry and you use Visine six times a day, I'm going to you know, say, well, that's your problem. I mean, that's going to create dry eyes. Just look at the back of the label. So we just have to be careful with how many times they're using it and what they're using it for.
So the real question is, who put Visine out there like that? Was it the actual optometrist, ophthalmologist, or was it just the commercials, the promotion? I mean, how did that come about that everyone's go-to is actually Visine when they need to lubricate their eyes?
That's interesting. I'm not real sure if they were the first ones out there really advertising and they hit it hard and they just got that market share. It's also really interesting. Have you ever looked at really old eye drop ads from like turn of the century through the 1920s and 30s? Because like the magic eye drop that you use for everything, cured everything, like from pinguecula to viral conjunctivitis, was Muro 128. And can you imagine?
Wow.
I mean, there's a few situations, of course, where I use Muro, like Fuchs dystrophy, for example. But I don't think putting on a pinguecula is going to help all that much.
No, not at all. And it's crazy how much we've advanced over time with medicine. But for some reason, since this newer technology has come out, it seems like we're now starting to move backwards. I mean, with the online eye exams, or excuse me, refractions, with the online contact lens fitting. I mean, what's going on with today's society?
I mean, I think we just live in a world, and people are going to blame our generation, Daryl, which we just have to accept. We live in a world where people don't think other people know better than them. We legitimately think that with our own smarts and our own know-how and our own internet connection, we can do anything that we put our Google to.
That's true. But you know, the flip side is this, you know, with all the knowledge out there, you would think these patients would look up this information and they'll see the negative outcomes of doing a refraction online or doing a contact lens fitting online. I mean, they should even just use common sense sometimes to think of, you know, like, we don't always get it right on the first time and when we're doing a contact lens fitting. So why in the world would an app be able to get it right on the first time?
Well, you know, there's just, especially contact lens evaluation, for example, many patients get confused about what that really is. I mean, how many times have you had someone balk at the fact that a contact lens evaluation costs money? They're like, but you're not doing anything. And I'm like, yeah, no, I just did all of it. We just checked your prescription. I evaluated the contact lenses. Like, that was something that we just did. So many people don't see value in that part. And then conversely, I've had people come in and I've done their contact lens evaluation every single year. And they say to me, I want to be fitted for contact lenses this year. I've never truly and properly been fitted. And I was like, no, that's what we do every single year. So some people expect it to be a lot more than what it is, or it should be a lot less than what it really is. But it's hard to really, on the patient side of it, see what's happening because it's all happening on my side of the microscope.
Yeah. And you know, one thing that I tell my patients is that, you know, they're paying for the knowledge. You know, I study this. I understand it. I know how to do it in a timely manner, you know, so it's a lot of things that you don't see taking place that is actually taking place. And once you tell them that it's all knowledge based, you know, in regards to picking the right diameter, picking the right base curve, picking the right power, a lot of times they tend to get it and there's really no issues after that. But I understand completely what you're saying. It's just one of those things. I mean, at the end of the day, people are going to complain about anything that they have to pay for. Hell, I do the same thing when I go shopping myself. But, you know, you would think at least when it comes to medicine, you would not balk at having to pay any kind of fees that's going to ensure your vision and just safety in general.
I mean, it's tough. And I've had people kind of equate the eye exam to this. Maybe no one's ever told you this because they're a man, but I've had at least four people, women, say to me, oh, I'm here for my exam. I don't feel like I have to be, but they said I had to be here. And I was like, oh, well, we need to update your prescriptions if you want to get some more contact lenses. This is just like when I have to go to the OBGYN every year. They just give me the medicine, but I shouldn't have to be there. I was like, yes, 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 you should. Because if you have ovarian cancer, you would like to know about it.
Very much, right? Yeah, yeah. I haven't had those patients yet, but I'll let you know when I get my first one.
New conversation for you. They're not afraid to tell me things like that. But yeah, so I talk about eye cancer a lot more than I used to when I first started practicing. So try to make that. I was like, literally, when we go over the fundus photography, I'm always like, and I don't see any signs of cancer today. People are like, oh, cancer. But no, I mean, look, that's what one of the things that we're checking for. And if we don't talk about what we are not seeing, how are they going to know that's what I'm looking for?
Exactly. You know, in my office, we have a picture up where it has, what is it? I think 5 different pictures. It's one of the normal retina, diabetic retinopathy, hypertensive retinopathy, macular degeneration, and a tumor of some sort. And the one thing is that works out nicely is whenever patients are waiting, sometimes you can catch them standing up looking at those pictures, and then they're real intrigued about what's going on with the retinal photos. So I suggest all practices have that because it will draw more questions, but also answer a lot of questions.
I have the same experience as you. It makes a great conversation starter to show people what abnormal looks like when you're showing them their normal, because then they can see the value in those pictures. Oh my gosh, if my eyes looked like that next year, I'd be so glad I took the pictures. And yeah, it can change that fast.
Yeah. You know, one crazy thing about retinal photos, I can't remember the name of the program. I think is it iScape or iImagination? Anyways, whenever you post these photos up on the actual display, there's like a little bump that shows right and left. And every time a patient walks in, or we're going over the pictures, I should say, they always think that they have a bump or some type of tumor on their retina.
Yeah.
Have you ever had that?
Well, I don't have that problem anymore because I have Optis now, and it doesn't have any like bump that marks right and left. I've upgraded in the world, Daryl. You got
to
get with
the design. Okay, my bad. I need to step it up with the technology. You got me. My bad.
But no, yeah, that little, people would ask me about that all the time. Oh, what's that growth? And I was like, that's just for, you know, back in the day, which by the way, that is silly to have on there now. Really the only reason that little bump out was on there was because that was a carryover from when we used to have Polaroid pictures in the charts, and the doctor was afraid like, oh, they dropped the charts and the pictures go everywhere. I mean, there'd literally be no way to orient right and left. So that little cutout was there to mark the left eye so that if you dropped your patient chart and mixed up the pictures, you could always tell which one was right and which one was left.
Yeah.
That's archaic. I feel like I'm ancient just saying that, but I didn't have, just in case everybody's wondering how old I am. No, I did not have Polaroid pictures.
So switching gears, Jennifer, I know that we both didn't make it to Vision Expo West this year. I think you were tied up with something at SEO, right?
Yeah. Shout out to my fellow SEO grads, class of 2011. We were hanging out in Memphis this past weekend for our 5-year reunion. So I had a good excuse to miss View this year. I had a blast. But I'm embarrassed to say this. Okay. I haven't been to Vision Expo yet. And it's on my to-do list. Every single time it comes around, I say, I'm going to go this time. I am going to New York. I'm committed. Like, sign me up right now in the spring.
I'll be there with you.
So, Daryl, I mean, tell me about your Vision Expo experiences, because I know you've been a couple times.
Oh, hands down. Vision Expo is my favorite show. I really love the show in New York. My wife loves it simply because of all the great shopping as well as the cool hotels. And we're definitely foodies, so we go to all these different restaurants up there as well. But I really like it simply because of the overall conference. I mean, the continuing education. You know, I love the continuing education back home with the local chapters. But the continuing education courses that they have at Vision Expo are phenomenal. I mean, they have some of the best optometrists there giving us education as well as some great ophthalmologists. But also I love to be able to meet the eyewear designers firsthand and develop a relationship with them. And it's very cool to also see some of the new technology that's out there. Hands down, every eye care professional at some point in time in their life should attend some type of show, especially the Vision Expo show. I say give New York a shot, and from there, you know, play around in SILMO or maybe Vision Expo East and, West. And also, what's the other one? Mito. There's so many that's out there, but I really, really love
New York. I think
it's
real fascinating. I mean, just listening to the podcast guests that we've had on the show so far this year, Sir Oliver Goldsmith, Jason Kirk, Wes Studi. I mean, the eyewear designers that we have the privilege of working with as optometrists are amazing spokespersons for our profession, for ocular health. And most optometrists have a real passion for eyewear design too anyway. And of course the designers are real happy to share their inspirations. It's kind of like being in an artistic community, talking to them. And it reminds me, when I was in optometry school, I heard the phrase, the art and science of optometry. And so oftentimes we think about the science in our profession, but talking to these designers, you really get a feel for the art, and it's exciting.
Yeah. You know, one thing that blows my mind with these designers are, you know, yes, they're very artistic. They create masterpieces, but I really, really do admire their knack for business. I mean, these guys really know business. They know how to look at the numbers. They know how to market. I mean, they really have everything down.
That's true, and we can learn quite a bit from them. And talking to them, these people know how to move on social media. They have made their businesses from scratch. And just thinking about turning a company into a national powerhouse, or an international powerhouse for that matter, and we're just trying to market our own little local optometry office to the general public in our local city. I mean, you can learn a lot from following their accounts on what's successful online.
So Jen, who's your favorite designer so far?
Oh, Daryl, don't ask me that. That's mean. I can't answer that.
You know, I like to be a little messy at times, Jen. I just had to mess with
you
there a little bit.
So what has been your hands down like favorite Vision Expo experience so far? Because I think back in New York, you got to even do an interview with Coco and Breezy at one point.
Yes, I've actually had two amazing experiences. One was definitely the interview with Coco and Breezy. I actually didn't interview them. They interviewed me, which was pretty cool. And those girls are down to earth, love their style, love their flavor. They're real cool. My other very exciting experience was the first time I actually met Sir Oliver Goldsmith. You know, we would always communicate via social media, but when I actually met him, I was walking through the halls of the Vision Expo, and he actually called my name out. And I'm looking around seeing who's calling me, because, like, who knows me besides my wife here? And it's Sir Oliver Goldsmith. And ever since then, we've been best of buds. So, you know, the show is amazing. I mean, you meet so many people, you see so many things. I mean, it's
so
life changing.
Did he just recognize you from IC Euphoria?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's so neat. You had a celebrity moment. I've never
had
one of
this. I know, right? Right. My wife was like, she was like, wow, people do actually read your blog. I said, yeah, you think I'm just doing this for no reason? But get this, after I met him, we were talking, he showed me the collection, then he actually was like, so are you going to post me on your social media? I was like, man, this guy here.
He's smart.
Yeah, right? I mean, he reminded me. He said, don't forget, when I saw him later on in that show. I was like, I have you. I got you. No worries. But yeah, those are my two most memorable experiences. Man, as a matter of fact, you got me pumped up. I'm ready to go to Vision Expo right now. But I can't wait to go next year. And on another note, aren't you traveling somewhere pretty soon, Jennifer?
So you got, if you're an avid Defocus Media podcast listener, by the way, we love you and we really appreciate your support, because we're having so much fun doing this. But we're going to be on a very slight podcast hiatus, because I am going to Japan and Taiwan here in the next week or two. So when I come back, I'll be full of stories about the eyewear fashion from the streets of Tokyo, which I've hyped it up quite a bit, especially after talking to Sir Oliver Goldsmith. So I'm expecting some sort of like groundbreaking optical experience. But anyway, so we'll be back as soon as I get back in town and bringing you lots of exciting new guests and all the latest topics in optometry, which hopefully the world doesn't explode with all sorts of doomsday things before I return. We could use a few slow weeks on optometry, I feel like.
And be sure to follow us at Defocus Media on Instagram, Facebook, and everything. Jennifer is going to be posting some exciting pictures, and we'd love for you guys to follow her adventure as well.
Oh, and one more thing. If you are a Project Runway fan, in the next week or two, make sure you're watching, because Transitions is going to be sponsoring the runway show in an upcoming episode that is probably airing in the next couple of episodes. So be on the lookout for an optometry episode of Project Runway.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast, and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.